Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
With so much inactivity and hours before I'll be able to speak to any players, I thought I would go back to a time of sunshine and where this tennis odyssey all began. Last year's Monte Carlo Masters. I reported on the tournament for a piece Gary had asked me to write, and it was there that I attended my first press conference, which was with Novak Djokovic, who was coming back from surgery on his elbow. I found it fascinating to listen to him and watch the relationship between player and journalist reveal itself as I took it all in. Using my diaries, this is my analysis of my first big tennis press conference. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. April the 16th, 2018. There was a moment today that changed everything for me. I went to see Djokovic's press conference after his win over Dusan Lajovic. The spectacle of it really affected my thinking, giving me an idea of what kind of observer I want to be in the tennis arena. I'm not particularly interested in the results, more in the player's mentality in dealing with being a tennis player. How they cope with injuries, for example, what keeps them going through the darker times. I don't want to report on instantaneous news. That isn't particularly interesting to me. My time here in the press room shows me that's a hard business to break into and seemingly a closed shop. I want to understand the struggle and effort it takes to become a decent tennis player, not even the highest level tennis player. But what it takes to do this week in, week out. For many, it isn't about the glamour. It isn't about the fame. It's about having a job, a career. It's about survival. As a new observer of the tennis world, I want to document my experiences and explain how this world works to you, while trying to work it out for myself in the first place. Things that I could take for granted, I want to explore and examine. From how to behave as a reporter to the unspoken rules of the press room. This will bring to life just what goes into being a journalist. It can be long hours waiting for one moment that brings your day to life. Perhaps when you finally get granted an interview you never expected to get, and one has to keep alert as things can rapidly change and a press conference can suddenly change its time, especially if the player decides they want to do it earlier than expected, although more often than not, it's later than expected. It's a strange relationship between media and athlete. I'm genuinely keen to watch a press conference in action and to understand how it works and the rules of engagement between journalist and player. I see on the board that one presser, as they call it in the business, is scheduled for late afternoon and it features Novak Djokovic. He's been out for some time with a bad elbow injury which required surgery. A month ago, he made a comeback at the Indian Wells Masters and the Miami Open. But he wasn't fit and went out in his first match at Indian Wells to Taro Daniel. No disrespect, but a player he would normally expect to beat. And in Miami, he lost in his first match against Benoit Paire. A different class of player, but again, a player he would normally overcome at the height of his powers. And there were whispers that perhaps he was not the player he was, that time and injury had caught up with him, and possibly he was a spent force. How would he fare a few weeks later at Monte Carlo? He had been up against his fellow countryman Dusan Lajovic, and I watched this match from the luxury of the press seats all by myself. Free water, warm air, sunshine, and one of the modern greats of tennis in front of me. This felt magnificent. A few journos wandered in and out of this seating area, and I heard snippets of conversation. He's not the same. There's not the power or the speed that there was. I doubt he can challenge again. I struggled hard to see this damaged and flawed player and thought he just looked a little ring rusty and needed time out on court. But what do I know? I'm not really a sports journalist.
Novak Djokovic.
Djokovic runs out an easy winner, 6-love, 6-1. And later that afternoon, I take my seat in the conference room amongst 20 or 30 journalists. I feel a little like an interloper, but no one takes any notice of me or cries out, "What's he doing in here? He's not a real journo. Throw him out. Imposter. Charlatan." I'm always wary of situations I've never experienced before, as I don't like to draw attention to myself until I understand the rules. Once I learn them, I'm happy for people to be aware of me as I can then play the game. I just have to discover my place in the pecking order, which I imagine is pretty low. I sit towards the back of the gathering and watch and wait. People are making notes, some are drinking coffee and chatting, and it feels like a classroom waiting for teacher to turn up. The moderator appears and announces Novak Djokovic's arrival. Everyone scurries to their chairs, and I am immediately struck by how tall Djokovic is as he walks through the room. He looks much smaller on telly. A couple of people rush forward to the table he now sits behind and place their phones next to the official ATP-branded mics. I presume this is so journos can have their own copies of the conference for reference later on. I'm not going to race up there now and put my phone by Djokovic, as that really would be drawing attention to myself. So I record from where I am. Note to self, place phone by tennis player and remember to hit record. I bet there's a few that have missed that old button. The first question is naturally how he felt after time out of the game and the injury. This is, after all, his first win since he came back in America a month ago.
Well, I thought it was good, considering the amount of matches I've played in the last almost 12 months. I mean, played probably 6-7 matches in total. Ever since Wimbledon last year, and I personally feel, and I know that you can also see it from outside, that I'm lacking more of the match play and more of those situations of, you know, competition, you know, playing out points and official match, because, you know, obviously one practicing and playing practice sets is one thing, and playing an official match completely something else, mentally mostly. So also, you know, with injury and everything that was happening in the last couple of months and the post-surgery period, me trying to come back to Indian Wells in Miami and obviously playing well below the desired level. You know, it wasn't that easy for me to cope with all of that, but at the same time, you know, it made me, I think, even more inspired to come back and try to play the way I play today. I mean, I think, as I said, under the circumstances and considering I haven't played too many official matches, I thought I played well. I thought I started a tournament well. It's first match on clay, and it's against a very good friend of mine who obviously, you know, hasn't played at his best and is making a lot of mistakes, but still, I thought all in all was just a great start of the tournament.
I find him thoughtful, effusive and eloquent. He also seems happy to talk and recognises that he is just beginning his return. The journalists don't have a mic to use and their questions are hard to hear as I'm at the back of the room. Note to self, never sit right at the back again. The next question asks about the reintroduction of old coach Marian Vida as his new coach.
It's a fresh start, I think, for both of us. And I missed him, and I have a feeling that he missed me or tennis or both. But we both enjoyed a lot the last 10 days of practice we had. He knows me better than any tennis coach I've worked with. He's a friend, and he's someone I can share a lot of things with, you know, whether it's professional or private life. He's always there for me, and he knows me, you know, inside out. He knows, you know, what I need in order to get to the highest possible level of play. So we could not ask for a better start. I mean, together, obviously, we, as I've mentioned before, don't have any kind of long-term commitment with each other. We just want to see how it goes in this tournament. How, you know, so far has been a lot of positive things and actually only positive emotions every practice session and today on the court. So hopefully we can keep going in the right direction.
Part of being a reporter is to analyse what's being said, and I'm intrigued by the thought that Vida may have been missing him and tennis. Missing implies an emotional loss, something not in your life that you wish was there. I wonder whether some athletes lose their love of the game they play, or whether it just becomes what they do, a job. It's an intriguing thought, and more pertinent than wondering why a backhand wasn't working or a serve wasn't firing. It's the mentality that goes with being a sports person at any level that intrigues me. The next question asks why he decided to stop working with Andre Agassi and Andy Roddick, although they were never his official coaches.
Well, look, you know, first of all, I mean, I'm so grateful to both of them for, you know, willing to help me out, to be there for me, to give, you know, contribute as much as they can to my career, to my life. And of course we still stayed friends, and you know, Roddick is actually, I think, coming here in a few days, so I'll be seeing him, and this doesn't affect our personal relationships and that we established, you know, over the years, both with Roddick and Andre. But we just decided that it's better to part ways, because you know, we both sides did, you know, did feel that that's best for, you know, for me and for them. So we just I didn't know in which direction I want to go. You know, after Indian Wells in Miami, I was, you know, questioning, you know, which way I want to move ahead. And I didn't want to keep them in, so to say, in the dark, in a way, in being indecisive and not giving them clear, you know, indications in what, you know, what I'm going to do, because the elbow was still not as good as it was in the last 10 days, 7 days. So after two years, finally, I can play without pain, and in Indian Wells, Miami was, especially in Indian Wells, was not like that. I understand as well that, you know, I might have rushed my decision to play a little bit, because I missed matches, I missed playing. I didn't have risk of hurting the elbow, which is good, but I obviously wasn't ready to play at that level. Physically, I mean, I you know, had to work, but I decided to be there, and that's it. You know, Marian is back, and you know, we just see things as they are at the moment, and God knows what future brings.
Djokovic is at pains to make sure everyone understands there was no bust up with either Agassi or Roddick, and that his friendship with them is unaffected. I think he was expecting this question and is thoughtful and measured in his reply, as he knows that some within this audience are sniffing around for the odour of intrigue or trouble in the breakup, searching for a headline and how they would love to confirm rumours that there had been a dramatic falling out and not, as stated, an amicable parting of the ways. But Djokovic is a consummate professional and pushes the issue calmly aside and moves on to talk about how he's gone through 2 years of pain. With the relentless schedule of events, many players probably push their physical limits and play through the pain barrier too much. But what grabs my attention is that he admits he may have rushed his decision to play in Miami and Indian Wells because he missed matches. He missed playing. There it is again, just like his coach, he's missed tennis. It's a simple thing to say, but a complex thing to digest. Here is a man who has won everything, and yet he simply missed the game. This is a key moment as far as I'm concerned. Is this him rediscovering his love of the game? If he harnesses his emotions, then who knows what could happen for him? It could drive him on to bigger and better things. I really want to ask him if he had lost his love of the game before the injury. Has this time out of the game made him reevaluate his relationship with the game? I see hands raised to ask questions, and I know my hand that has joined them will never be picked out. The higher ranked journos will get the opportunities to ask questions first, which I understand. I just hope someone asks my question. But no, here it comes again. Why didn't you think it worked with Andre? It's relentless, and I wonder how he'll react.
You have to understand that we, you know, first of all, we didn't have any commitment. We didn't have any contract. We didn't have, you know, he was not, you know, working with me officially. You know, he was helping me out, and he was really genuinely wanting to help and to give me advices and to share his experience with me, and that's, you know, that says, you know, speaks enough about him as a person, and you know that he is, and someone that I always admired as a player and as a person. And you know, the last 8-9 months with Andre was just amazing. You know, the amount of things that I've learned, just, you know, not just about tennis but life in general. And for that, I'm very grateful. And you know, so we didn't have a kind of official relationship, so we could not have ended it at the same time. So I mean, his, you know, invitation to call me, as he said, is always open. So I mean, I can call him any day and speak with him and ask him for tips, advices, or whatever, and you know, share something. So that's always the case with Andre and with Radek as well. Although with Radek was slightly different because we were talking about some long-term commitments, but you know, Radek was also ending his player career, and he, you know, to late in December, I, you know, we didn't know whether he's going to be a coach or player or both. So you know, before it has even started, in a way, I mean, it has ended, but you know, again, nothing personal, no bad feelings. We just split in a very normal way, and as I said, you know, we're going to be seeing each other and still keep on being friends.
Djokovic is gracious with his answer and avoids the trap of being contentious. Normally, just a couple of lines from a presser will be used in the written press and then it's forgotten. But this feels like there is so much actual content within it. It's fascinating to watch this sparring and jousting between the journalists and the player. I'm starting to realise why so many athletes dislike doing press. And here comes more digging, asking if he was disappointed that Agassi let the world know of the split before Djokovic himself had put the news out.
Andre was giving an interview, as I understand, in ESPN, and we talked about, I mean, it's, I don't see things really from that point of view. I don't, you know, I don't mind that, or I'm not disappointed at all. I mean, I just have gratitude towards Andre. I mean, and Radek, but especially Andre, for what he has done for me in the last year or so. I mean, I mean, that's it. You know, I felt only friendship. I felt only sincere willingness and desire to help me out, and that's all. I mean, I don't care about the game, who comes in and says, you know, things in the press first. I mean, nobody offended anybody, so we're still in a very good relationship.
Again, Djokovic dances round the question well. He reiterates his thanks and good wishes to a friend who helped him a lot. Perhaps sensing the line of questioning going on, the moderator says two more questions and that's it. That's their job, to protect the player when it starts to either get tricky or when the presser has gone on for long enough. My hand feels insignificant and definitely unnoticed as it waves in the air. I have found that in the pecking order, I have no peck. The next question asks if he played well because he was injury-free.
Well, it's a combination of things. I mean, obviously the pain was a huge factor. That was affecting my overall state and my mind. End of last year, when I started training again, I took, I think, about 4 months off from tennis. I did fitness, but I even when I'm doing conditioning training and fitness, I have to avoid, you know, doing stuff. I have to do specific work there. I can't throw a ball, or I can't, you know, impersonate tennis serve movements, and so it's a lot of things had to be left aside and compensated because, you know, the elbow was not healed. And if I, you know, could get a surgical intervention, could have done it before last year. Yeah, I mean, I could have, but at the time it wasn't what was advised to me. And I generally don't like surgeries. I've never had one, but it had to be done in the end, unfortunately, when the season already started. So that was a tricky part. The intervention was done right, and I came back already after 5 weeks, I mean, on the court from the moment when I had the surgery. So that's amazing, but I still obviously wasn't ready game-wise, physically. So Indian Wells and Miami were really kind of... you know, a struggle on the court for me mentally, you know, because I know that I can play much better than that, but I couldn't. I just wasn't ready, and that's it. But today, you know, pain-free, you know, obviously having Marian, there's a lot of positive emotions, as I said. He knows me very well, so we worked on a lot of great things in the last 10 days. Physically, I think I'm getting in a better shape, you know, as the weeks go by. And so I think today was a result of combination of a few factors and elements.
A solid answer again, and he's winning on my judge's scorecard. I want to hear more about the joy of playing and the emotional reward of being pain-free and his love of the game. I guess I'm a hopeless romantic, and now it's the last question. And the drooping hands wither away unanswered in their quest for knowledge. The last question is a good one and asks whether he's been searching for someone to give him emotional support more than anything else.
Well, look, you know, I was very fortunate throughout my life and my career to have really great, honest support from people that are closest in my life, starting with my parents, my brothers, obviously, my wife, and the team of people that I've had, I mean... literally with all of them, if not all of them, then 98% of people that I've worked with professionally have been and have stayed my friends. I mean, it's hard as a tennis player not to create that kind of chemistry, if you know what I mean, because you travel so much with each other, and if you do that over 10 or plus years with someone like Marian, who is, you know, the person that he is, very humble, very genuine, and liked around the tour, you know, from everyone. then, you know, it becomes the relationship becomes much more profound than player coach relationship. So that's, you know, the first practice that we had, that's what I felt. I mean, I felt safe on the court. I felt motivated. I felt, you know, felt a lot of great things. So we're going to both work on to keep it that way.
That's a pretty deep answer about his relationship with his coach, which is again insightful. And then it's over. Djokovic moves outside to do TV press, and everyone drifts off to the four corners of the media area. I stay in my seat and ruminate. I've been moved by Djokovic and believe this has been a major period of reflection for him. And consequently, he's changed things, and it's like he's starting over. Could he get back to the level he was at? Has he got the will, desire, and the team to become a winner again? Is this the moment for the renaissance of Novak Djokovic? I feel this is an important time for him, and I like him a whole lot more now I've seen and heard him in the flesh. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that little diversion. It's still raining here in Nottingham, and what I wouldn't give for a little bit of Monte Carlo warmth. I've been expecting Gary all morning, but this weather will make the man of lateness even later. He seems to consider his lateness as a superpower, which he can summon up at will. It's a natural and deep force within him. I tell you, he will listen to this and think I've given him a huge compliment. I'll grow old in the Gary Hayes waiting room. Right. This is buttering no parsnips, as my grandma used to say. I'm going to go and count raindrops. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Thirty-three thousand and forty-five. 33,046, 33,047, 33,049, 33,050. Oh, did I just count wrong? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You've been listening to Dropshot, a narrative podcast series written and produced by me, Kerry Levy. Gary Hayes was my co-producer on the series, and when he could be bothered to turn up, also travelled across the UK to record it with me. Taylor Hayes is Dropshot's sound engineer, while Leon Rachinsky-Gorman ably assisted on several episodes. Our podcast artwork is by Matt Alabaster. And Jimmy Goodwin composed our music. If you would like to hear more about the series, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at This Is Dropshot. This has been an original production from Highway 61 and Kerry Levy.
It is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.